Welcome to the Martial Arts and Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Ozzy. Jerry, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. I'm honored and humbled to have someone with such experience like you on the show. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
So I'm just curious. I mean, you have lots of experience. You're fourth generation away from Yang Cheng Fu. How did you get into Tai Chi? How did it all start? Did it start with another martial art, or were you interested in Tai Chi right away?
No, not at all. No, my love was gymnastics when I was younger, and I got hurt. I hurt my back quite badly in one of the moves, and I was always into sports. Did other martial arts, but you know, for a year, for 5 months, nothing really extensive or intensive. And I was taking my third degree at the University of Alberta, and I had a professor who took us on a weekend retreat to his place away from Edmonton in the boons, in the bush. Actually, he had converted a farm barn, a large barn, into his home, and. He had a student. The two of them had just started doing some Tai Chi, and I'd never heard of it. I had never heard of it, but they had done some Tai Chi with someone they had just met recently, who had just moved to Edmonton from China, direct from China, to be with his family. He and his wife and kids moved to Edmonton very, very soon, very, very shortly before then. And they were still doing some of these moves, and I was fascinated. I was mesmerized. I'd never seen anything like that, and it just sort of spoke to me. And I started talking to them, and I asked them what it was about, what it was, who it was. They gave me the name of the master. His name was Mac Yin Po. And I went to see him the following week. I was so excited about it. And he was running a store. He was a banker and mathematics teacher in China. That was his profession. And he came to Edmonton, ran it. He had started a store, and he lived upstairs. I went to see him. We had a nice talk with his very broken English. He was still learning. And he liked me, I guess, and he said, come. And he had classes in his home once a week, and there were some doctors there, a couple professors, and you know, people of some intelligence. And I met them and started doing it in his home, and we continued for many years together, and I became one of his few instructors, one of his few pupils that he taught individually, and then I started teaching for him after a few years. He felt comfortable enough that I could assist him to teach, and then I took over some classes myself, and we went to different places like the University of Alberta in the summers to teach, and taught some seniors and taught in a few different places, of course, in his own studio. He had a lot of people coming. He was very well respected and thought of in the Chinese community and in some of the other parts of it as well.
That's phenomenal. Now, just for people to know, Mac Ying Po was the student of Tung Ying Chie, who was the student of Yang Cheng Fu, who developed the Yang form of Tai Chi, correct?
Yeah, Yang Cheng Fu's grandfather developed a secret form based on the Chen style, which was basically the first family form that was popular, but only within the family. It was a very secret type of thing. That happened a lot in China with martial arts, with different types of exercises that families developed based on wherever they came from, you know, the Tao or the Tao Chi or all kinds of things. And the form itself was changed by Yang Cheng Fu to be longer, rounder, so there was a lot more exercise involved in the various joints, and he wanted to open it up to go beyond family. His father taught him, his grandfather taught him, and he became quite renowned. And now, the Yang style is one of three main ones. There are some others like Sun Style, a few others, a couple type of Wu styles. But the Yang style now is probably practiced by 80% of the people, 75-80% of the people in the world. It's the most popular style. And it's not one, the Chen, for instance, is, or the Wu, is much more martial arts, much more, there's a lot of more energy that comes out the spurts, very low. And the Yang style, something could be practiced by, you know, if it's done properly, taught properly, it could be done by seniors. I taught people who are 102.
Wow.
And I've taught people who are 16 and 15 and 14. But it could be done by anyone. And it depends on your teacher, your instructor, as to how far you want to go, and on yourself, whether you want to get into it a little more deeply, do some more studying of it. And it's always good to look at other masters, to look at what other ways of looking at it, so you're learning as much as possible if you want to go further.
Now, you said that you taught a lot of seniors and you yourself got into it because you had injured yourself in gymnastics. Did you find that practicing Tai Chi helped recover the injury?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've always had back problems since that accident. At times I couldn't walk properly. I had to fall off of the high bar. And my spotters were looking the other way, it seemed. So I came straight down. But I tore a lot of muscles, a lot of sinews and attachments. So I was having a hard time. And I was always looking for something. I was doing massage and stretching and looking for different things, researching. But when I saw Tai Chi, I didn't think of it for myself that it would be so good for me. But it has been just a wonder. It has been a wonder. It strengthened my core. My legs, my hips, my shoulders became so much more resilient and stronger. So it's really done a lot for me without me actually thinking of it initially to do that.
You hear so many people who love Tai Chi because of the breathing and the, you're kind of stretching without stretching, I guess.
Yeah. It's like water. It's a fluid movement. It's a linking of different moves into a karate choreography, and all the different forms of Tai Chi, like the Wu, the Chen, the Sun, they're all Tai Chi, but they have different forms, and they do them somewhat differently, but they're all connected to Tai Chi, the idea of Tai Chi, of the breathing, of the linkage of the movements to become very smooth, very fluid. The fluidity is such an important part of it, among other things.
One of the other things, other than fluidity, that's extremely important, and I think is probably most well known for Tai Chi, is breathing. And I know yoga breath takes a very important place in yoga, no matter what type of yoga you're doing. If you're a boxer, you have certain times to inhale or exhale. Same with bodybuilders. Where does breathing link in with Tai Chi?
Well, breathing, the Tai Chi uses what they call Qigong breathing. And you've probably heard of Qigong, others as well.
Absolutely.
And there's a very definite connection to Qigong. And Qigong is often used by Tai Chi students, by Tai Chi teachers, teaching their students. And I've always used it at the beginning of each class to stretch, to do breathing, to learn the Qigong breathing. And there's different types of breathing, and there's more involved types as you learn it, but it's also something that's linked, and it's a stretching. It's a tight stretching that there's no spirituality. I mean, if you come from the Chinese community and that culture, there are belief systems that is very spiritual, and it can be just like Tai Chi can be very spiritual, but like anything else you do, very spiritual. It's a very personal thing, but if there's a very practical component to Qigong as there's Tai Chi. It's a very specific type of stretching, depending, there's thousands of forms of it, and each teacher has their own way of doing it, but again, there's a real connection. So using the Qigong breathing, which is through the nose and out through the mouth, there have been studies which show how breathing in through the nose, out the mouth, really helps the oxygen circulate through the body, and it could be called qi, which is the energy, you know, depending on how you put it, but it's a circulation of the oxygen and the energy it brings forth that throughout the body. So it warms up, warms it up, cleans it up, and brings it in the lungs. And it's a very, it's not a massive, sudden thing, but it does do it very subtly, and it makes a difference over time. I mean, I've learned to breathe. I was a very shallow breather before. Then I have to, every several minutes, I have to take a deep breath to catch up a little bit with the Qigong breathing. And it's also a meditation, both Tai Chi and Qigong, very much of a meditation, which is very much a part of what they are.
I'm glad you mentioned that you had to teach yourself how to breathe, because my mother has a friend who is a former yoga teacher, and she taught me how to breathe when I was younger, to really open the bottom of the lung up and also in through the nose, out through the mouth. And we live in a world, I mean, we both live in Montreal, which is a big metropolitan city. There's a lot of traffic, there's construction, there's people that need things like right away, right now. And I noticed that most people are overly stressed. And if they sat back for, I don't know, 2-3 minutes every few hours and took in a few deep breaths and breathed properly, or even if they have like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch and it tells you to do your breathing, it would make such a huge difference for people. But not everyone does it. It's really an underdone exercise that everybody is capable of doing.
Yes, yes. It's not a forced process or activity. It's a very natural type of breathing, but you breathe right at the bottom of the lungs, and you separate the ribs a certain way, and it's a visualizing type of a process.
It's funny because you see young babies, they breathe like that naturally, and then somewhere I guess we lose that.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because there's a type of breathing called baby breath, which is more. It's somewhat more, it's less simplistic than the regular Qigong breathing, and one has to be somewhat more involved in it and having done many years with it, or some years with it, before it gets into the baby breathing, the baby's breath. And there's a great book by a fellow called Cohn on Qigong, which is just wonderful. He's very, very, Kenneth Cohn. He's very astute and very learned, having come from several different disciplines and several masters. He's learned well, but he has a book out on Qigong, and it's so detailed. It's a thick book. It's amazing. I wouldn't think that there's so much to be said about Qigong, the history, the mechanics of it, the process, the meditative part of it. There's so much, but it's a wonderful book.
How old is Tai Chi? In maybe not in its current form, but I mean, was it around when Lao Tzu wrote the Tao Te Ching? Is it older than that? Did it develop after Kung Fu, before Kung Fu? Do we have a timeline of roughly when Tai Chi was quote unquote born?
It's hard to say because there are two different ways that history was written about Tai Chi and about other things from China. There's the oral tradition and the written tradition. And the written tradition was made basically on what people thought they heard. The oral tradition, even though it's word of mouth from generation to generation, after some research, is thought to be even more factual than the written one. So there's all kinds of different stories, and some of them are, you know, with the Chinese culture and the writings back then, there at the talk, there was always, from Lao Tzu on, there was always, there seemed to be a real expansion of the story to give every item more clout, more to seem bigger than it is, to seem more spiritual, more involved than it is. So it's hard to say that there's real truth and factual stories in what was told, in what has come down. So there's different stories, and you know, they talk about a snake and a bird, and you know, it's all spiritual and fairy tales, and it's hard to say that it was real. So basically, I think, you know, they talked about an Indian yoga master who brought some martial art, very, very simplistic, basic martial arts to some of the temples in China in the 1500s, 1500s, around, and some say before then, some say after then, and to teach them how to defend themselves from the armies, and also give them some exercise because some of them were so cloistered. And from then, it seemed to develop. So that's one of the stories. And then they were talking about some going to the mountains and learning from the in the mountains and bring it down from there, the philosophers involved. But basically, it looks like about the mid-1700s, it was starting to develop a little bit more robust. And a family called Chen started to develop in the late 1700s and taught it only their own family. And a man called Yang, a family named Yang, who started it, who was the grandfather, I think it was the grandfather of Yang Cheng Fu, who developed it, what it is today, with Yang Cheng Fu making it more of a bigger style of it. But probably mid-1700s, maybe a little bit before then. So it's not as old as some of the different philosophies of China. It's I guess, a little bit more modern, even though it's mid-1700s.
I guess we could say it's modern, but based in deeper tradition.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's based on the yin-yang.
Right.
Absolutely, on yin-yang. And that's a whole philosophy of it. Well, hold. I mean, there's more to it, but it's such a basic part of it.
It's impressive how these things, you know, develop and move and how many people benefit from it. Some of the people that benefit from it are seniors. Unlike karate or kung fu, which may have impact, or definitely like a Thailandese kickboxing, which is very impactful, Tai Chi could be practiced, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there are people who practice what's called seated Tai Chi or chair Tai Chi.
Yeah, I've taught that as well. To individuals who have mobility issues, and it's either standing or sitting, and the idea is to move the body and to breathe as much as possible without having to move the legs. So a lot of these seniors, residents, as well, I was teaching in the last several years, 10 years, 10, 11 years, have I've used that method, and it was along with some other exercises I did with them. But basically, it allows them to move without having to use their limbs, their lower limbs, which they were unable to. They were unable to balance properly, even though balance was very much such an integral part of Tai Chi. So there's other ways of using it, for sure.
And there's definitely, there's no strain with Tai Chi. There's the deep breathing, there's a bit of a stretch, and like you said, it's very fluid mobility. Yeah. It's very liquid.
Very liquid. It's great for the joints. It doesn't tax the sinews, the attachments to the bones, to the joints, so that it allows them to move freely without putting them through a very strict and stressful strain. And that itself is so good for the seniors. It allows them movement. You find seniors who are moving so much better afterwards. But that also pertains to other exercise, not Tai Chi, not only Tai Chi. I mean, Tai Chi is not a magic bullet. In no way is it a magic bullet. It's just one type of exercise that, and I've always recommended to my students, do other things. Swim, walk a lot, do weights, do boxing is great because of the focus involved. And, do biking. I recommend all my students do other things besides just this one.
Definitely being active in general helps. You mentioned focus with boxing, but wouldn't you say that the fluidity of the movement and doing it correctly, you're basically doing what in karate would be called a kata, form, or a choreographed amount of moves.
Yeah.
Would that not help with focus and with mental concentration?
Very much. That's the meditative part, meditative and focused part. In fact, one of the things that I did is, and I had a woman call me yesterday who just found out she had Parkinson's. One of the things with Parkinson's is the exercises and activities that help with Parkinson's is that is the focus. So Tai Chi, because there is such a strong focus on not just the movements, the specific movements, but the way they're done, the balancing of it, the use of energy, it's the same with boxing and biking. They found that those three, and others as well, those three types of activities were incredibly supportive and to people with Parkinson's. Of course, not 100% of them, but for most of them. And I did a lot of work with Parkinson's patients in Edmonton and some here in Montreal. So it's a real focus. And they found that people slept better. They were less stressed. Their T cell structures for immunity had jumped incredibly. And these were, this is from research. From a long time ago, actually.
I would guess that the T cells improve because of the better breathing.
The better breathing, but it's also, I think there's more to it than that. And I can't tell you exactly why. And I don't think scientists right now, or people who are researching it at the universities and other places, hospitals, really could say why the T cells increased and the immunity of the person increased. It became stronger from Tai Chi. But they found after three times a week, over 13 weeks, there were different studies, and this is one of them, that people just got healthier, and they talked about different things. They talked about different areas of improvement with the quality of life being the most important. The quality of life included things that made up the quality of life, from walking, balancing, not falling because of the balancing, just breathing better, having better sleep, being more wide awake, more energy. There's all kinds of things that have to do with it. And I think a lot of the martial arts are like that. The hard forms of martial arts, the soft form of martial arts is not just Tai Chi, but I think something about Tai Chi really is so much simpler, maybe not simpler actually, but it's so much easier on the joints and the muscles of seniors.
I could be wrong, but I believe a study was done somewhere in Europe that showed that Tai Chi and yoga, when done together, obviously not at the same time, but done post-stroke, showed a better muscle recovery and less neurodegeneration post-stroke than if they went to just standard physiotherapy. Do you happen to know anything about that, or would you maybe try to guess as to why? I know neither of us are doctors, but would you have a guess as to why?
Basically, I think because the body requires, I haven't seen that study. I do a lot of research. I keep up with the research that's being done. I go to the sites often and download a lot. So I have a lot on my computer, but that one I haven't seen. I've seen others that have to do with the brain, with other abnormalities of the body, with other things that the ailments that people go through, but not that one. However, my guess would be that because of the type of breathing, because of the fluid, I've always thought that the fluid motion, liquidity of the way the different joints and parts of the body move together in synchronous type of movement, in that they start and end at the same place, or they move at different, like the arms may move at different speeds, but always smoothly, always ending up at the same place. There's a very definite concentration of the brain, and which affects the rest of the body. And because it's so smooth, there isn't any damage. There's no damage. There's never any kind of accidents with Tai Chi that I've ever heard of. Unless there's some crazy teacher who insists on doing a lot more martial arts.
There's always one in a thousand, right? That one guy who's going to revolutionize everything.
Yeah, there was a study done between a university in Florida and a university in China, and I can't remember where in China, but he did a collaborative study about 5 years ago, four, five, 6 years ago, and I can't remember exactly when, where they had individuals start who hadn't had any experience in Tai Chi, do, again, several weeks, probably 12, 13 weeks, 10 weeks, I can't remember what, because I haven't seen a study for several years. And they found, they did a baseline examination of the individual before on different areas of the body, including lungs and their ability to move, their mobility, actually, in different parts of the body. They looked at the ages, and they found, they also did an fMRI on their brains, both before and after. And the fMRI is more than just MRI. It looks at the blood flow in the brain at the same time. They found that individuals had, there were six or seven areas, specific areas of the brain where the neurons actually grew. So the area of the brain, that area, those six or seven areas of the brain actually grew over the time they were doing Tai Chi, those 12, 13, 15 weeks, whatever it was. And I can't say, tell you exactly how long.
But that, either way, that's even if it was half a year, that's very impressive because not much does that.
It is. But again, I think that would happen with other types of exercise, not just Tai Chi. I'm not trying to put Tai Chi down. I just don't want people to think that Tai Chi is the end all and the be all.
It's no, not for sure. It's like you said, it's part of a puzzle.
Yeah.
Which is, it's great. It's number one, it's fun and relaxing.
And the way I teach my classes is fun. It's always fun with joking and, you know, there's a discipline and they know when it's discipline, but there's always a lot of socializing,
which is
really good with classes.
It's also great. We're going to take a quick break so I could thank the sponsors of this show, and we'll be right back. Just want to take a second to thank the sponsors of this show, XP Labs. XPLabs.net, whether you want whey protein isolate from New Zealand grass-fed cows, whether you want collagen protein, and everybody should be having collagen protein. If you're on the keto diet, they have keto proteins, they have keto BHB salts, they have MCT powder, and they have keto test strips. XPLabs.net, you can use code AUSSIE10 at checkout to save 10%. My other sponsor is Egg Weights. These are awesome. You hold them in your hands. They look like mini eggs, and they add 1, 2, or 3 pounds, depending on which ones you buy. They are good for spinning. They're good for running. They're definitely good for kickboxing, boxing, or any form of martial art. And on checkout, you can use code AUSSIE, O-Z-Z-I-E, and you can save 10% there as well. So xplabs.net. Code AUSSIE10, O-Z-Z-I-E-10 for 10% off, and eggweights.com, code AUSSIE, O-Z-Z-I-E. So you mentioned the social aspect of the classes, and I noticed one thing that's true amongst most martial arts, and, you know, most martial arts are looked at as an individual sport. It's something you do independently. But there's this big community that develops, whether you're in a karate dojo or a taekwondo dojang, or if you do kung fu, or even if you just go to like hot yoga, you notice there's this camaraderie of, oh, so-and-so's not in the class. Why are you not here?
Yeah.
Or if, you know, somebody's injured or ill, it's like, oh, let's reach out to them and stay in touch with them and let them know we're thinking about them. And I know other sports like CrossFit and whatever, they boast a lot about community, but what's the community like in Tai Chi? Because I would assume, like other martial arts, that it's a very strong community in those classes.
Oh, it is. It is. We used to go, not with my I've often gone with my master and his family to different restaurants and met his Chinese friends who were much older than me, but... And not eat their food because I couldn't take their food because they went to very traditional restaurants. But a few of the instructors, there were only a few of us who he was comfortable with, and we had a real camaraderie. And I still meet some of them whenever I go back to Edmonton. We get together and we practice. We go to a restaurant, a Chinese restaurant. But we used to go after class, several of us and some of the students as well. We became quite familiar with and friendly with. It wasn't a master-student the type of thing you see in university. It's you know, we're all, some of them are much older than us, some younger, some our age. It became a real camaraderie, and it was a community. It was a real community. And imagine other martial arts classes, not just Tai Chi, have something similar.
Oh, absolutely. It's when you're in the martial arts lifestyle like we are, it becomes part of it. I have a t-shirt that says martial arts. It's not a sport. It's a lifestyle. And I think that's one of my favorite t-shirts because it's so true. It's just, it becomes part of who you are.
Yeah, it does. And there's so many different types of people who came to classes. They all learned at different paces. Some learned easier than others. But we all formed a bond. And it was like a friendship. And it was part of my life. And you say, this is your style. Your lifestyle is very much that. Very much.
I would say, other than the benefits of the breathing and the fluid movement and every other benefit that comes with Tai Chi, feeling connected, be it to your family or to a group, which would be the Tai Chi group, that has to be good for you. That I think people who have a strong family bond or a strong community bond do very well. In fact, the Blue Zones, which are the there's four or five Blue Zones in the world where they have people that there's more centenarians, people that live to 100 per capita than anywhere else. Okinawa happens to be one of them, and there's a place in Italy. And one of the things that they have in common is that they all live near their family, and all their neighbors watch all the kids together, and it's very community based.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons I love martial arts so much, is it's a great community. Nobody will say, "Oh, you just do Tai Chi," or, you know, there's always the debate, which got into how the UFC got developed. Oh, is Kung Fu better than karate? What about Thai boxing versus American kickboxing, like which is better? And there's always that curiosity, but there's this level of respect amongst martial artists that I love and admire.
Yeah. And you know where this comes from, I think, is from the instructor or master or the person who's teaching, whose class it is. There's a personality to that individual, whether that person is a soft person and he likes people or she likes people. Or there is, you know, there's a real respect for that person, and the students often take that on. It's like taking on a color or taking on a certain type of uniform. Or the master really dictates, without doing it purposefully, dictates a certain style of thinking about themselves, about the, you know, and it's a discipline. But you learn. My master was a very soft individual, very friendly, laughed a lot, and he was the kind of person that I've always admired. He didn't seem to hate people. He loved people. He understood his skills. He was very comfortable in his skin, knowing what skills he had, why he was doing this, and had many, many, many years of experience doing it. So he learned a lot, and he was good at sharing it. So all the students felt the same way. It wasn't, we weren't fighting with anyone else. We weren't competing with anyone else. We were trying to do our best, and we learned that from our master.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty special.
And I think that's what happens with a lot of classes, not just Tai Chi, but other classes as well. You learn from the person you start to learn from. You develop your style, your way of thinking about it. That it's not competitive, or it is competitive, depending, I think, often who your master is. It's partly about your own personality, but I really believe the master has a lot to do with that.
I happen to agree with you. We've spoken a lot about Parkinson's and post-stroke, but the truth is Tai Chi isn't only, although it benefits seniors greatly, and it can be done seated if need be and whatever, it doesn't necessarily have to be for seniors. There's a lot of benefits of Tai Chi for younger children as well, correct?
Oh yeah. In fact, in China, in the culture, it was thought that the discipline was very important for the kids. There are a lot of kids going into some of the temples, to learn Tai Chi and other forms such as that. And that was for discipline. It wasn't that they were to become instructors in that form, but to learn the skills, of course, but to learn a discipline. So for kids, it's wonderful. But a lot of kids these days, we've talked about this so many times, I'm sure you have in your class with others, a lot of the kids, especially with a soft form, an inner form like Tai Chi, the kids don't want it. Their energy level is not at that point unless they read about it and they really like it. It's most kids just don't take to it.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was writing myself notes for this podcast, I said, you know, it seems that younger kids go to karate or taekwondo or kung fu mostly because their parents want them to learn to defend themselves. And then you have a lot of seniors saying, oh, I can do Tai Chi because there's no impact and it's good. And, oh, I remember my old neighbor used to do it and she loved it type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's funny, although there are still younger folk that try it. I lived in Alberta as well for a while. And my introduction to Tai Chi was at the YMCA in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go and lift weights there and work out there. And I noticed in front as I was leaving, I forget what night I used to go, and it was around 7 o'clock at night, and I'd get out, and there was a group of I'd say ladies in there, anywhere from 40s to 70s, and they were doing Tai Chi in the front, led by an instructor from the YMCA. And it immediately intrigued me because I've seen Tai Chi in the movies. I've read about Tai Chi. You know, you read the story, oh, if you speed up Tai Chi, it's the most deadly form of martial art. And I just – it was zen-like, for a lack of any better word. They were all in sync. You could see they were enjoying the sunset at the exact same time as they were doing their moves. Nothing was bothering them. No one was straining. Nobody was trying things that they weren't comfortable with. It was really nice. And that was my first introduction to Tai Chi. I tried to follow along for a while. Unfortunately, I haven't kept it up, but I do need to I'm very much ready to get into it seriously.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tai Chi, it's a great exercise just for meditation, for strength, for balance, especially balance. For inner strength, for breathing, but it's also a martial art. It was first a martial art.
Yes.
And still, in the smaller venues in China and some in North America and Europe, it's still practiced to develop the martial arts skills. There's real fighting. I hurt my shoulder doing it with another instructor years ago, and I had to have surgery. The fighting part of it is very deadly, because you're always using the other person's force. You never, well, certainly use your own force. There's part of it, but for the most part, you're always taking on the other person's force and turning around against them. And when you learn how to do that properly, you've learned the balance and being heavy on one foot and light on the other one and changing your center and knowing how to twist your waist being fluid with all the different parts of your body, it could be very, very deadly. And I don't know if deadly is a proper word, because it's more that it's a form that very few people can beat if the individual who's doing it has the skills to compete. And of course, I think that holds with the other martial arts movements as well, not just Tai Chi, but Tai Chi is very much, from beginning, a martial art. But you don't learn at the beginning like that. You learn the form itself, and you learn the methodology, and then you start to learn. After, if you do it traditionally, you learn the martial arts part of it, the self-defense and offense, much later on, once you've tackled and learned all the skills and the methodology of performing Tai Chi and practicing it properly.
And if you don't want to get into that, you never really have to, which is great.
No, I never really enjoyed that part of myself, so I didn't continue too much, although I enjoyed, you know, doing the saber and the sword and the push hands especially. Those are different parts of Tai Chi. There's so much involved, the lance. There's a lot involved that are in the end, used for martial arts. Although the sword and saber never really should be for that. It's more the use of the body and the hands and the arms and the body itself. But the sword and saber really to learn how to maneuver with the wrist and the hands and the arms and to just continue the parts of the body that you do with that you how you use them for Tai Chi, use them with sword and saber.
It's a long history that Tai Chi has, but I'm going to bring us right into 2020. And we're now all at home. In fact, this podcast is being done over the phone. No more in-person podcasts because of COVID. I know we're in Montreal. We're in what they're calling a red zone. And gyms and athletic clubs are closed. There are a lot of videos on YouTube. There are some videos on streaming platforms like Tubi, and I think maybe even on Amazon Prime. If somebody wants to get into Tai Chi to help them relax and to breathe and to just do fluid, non-impact exercise, would you say that logging on to one of these videos and trying to follow along would be a fair start while we're kind of secluded with no other options right now? And I mean, exercise helps immunity. So it's better to do something than nothing.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's a good stepping stone for someone who's, you know, willing to try?
Yeah, I would suggest that you can contact or connect with a teacher who you may hear of through someone else, or you've read about, you understand a little bit about that person, talk to them, but the teacher is really important. However, there is so much on the net that is, I'm a traditionalist. I'm really, really a traditionalist, to put it down basically. I mean, I believe in doing other things, but I also believe in doing it properly. And there's so much, crap on the net.
Yes.
People really don't know what they're doing. They develop their own little thing. They don't understand. I've seen it. I've laughed at it. But if you go into, if you like Tai Chi and you want to try it, you can go into the various, some of the, like the Yang family has a website. And there, it's called Yang, Y-A-N-G. Family. That's one style of Tai Chi. It's the most popular, but there are other styles too. You can look at the Chen, C-H-E-N, or the Wu, W-U. Those are the English translations, or the English writing of those three forms. And there are others like the Sun, which are all very good forms, and they're all different. But basically, they're Tai Chi. But the from what I understand, what I know, is the Yang. That's what I learned. So I can only say that from my point of view, the Yang family website is probably the best one to go on to if you are looking for something now during the COVID and can't talk to anyone, can't be taught by anyone in a, you know, close by, unless outside. And with getting into winter, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Unless you have a large room somewhere and you can be separated. But basically, yeah, that's what I would do. And there's various videos on there. Some of them are free, some of them you can learn. You can, there's introductions that don't cost anything on the web, on the Yang family. So there's all kinds of good stuff on there and good written introductions of what they are, what you can do with them, how to find the right thing for yourself. And you've got to choose. Not that someone says this person's the best. You've got to have a feeling about that individual.
Right, but, yeah, you got to have a connection with the instructor. And I'm going to, in our show notes, I'm going to post to the Yang family website so that our listeners, if they want to try that out, can get there.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. You know, there's certainly a place to start. And people can call me if they wish as well. You can share my number if you like. I don't mind talking to people. I love this. And any way I can share it, it's my pleasure.
So why don't you let our listeners know what your phone number is so they can get a hold of you should they want to?
Sure. My phone number is 514-569-1947, 569-1947. And if I don't answer, you leave a message. I'll call back, of course. But certainly, I'd love to talk about it.
And in our show notes, am I okay to give people your email in my show notes?
Sure.
Perfect. So if anyone wants to try that, the email will be in the blog associated with this episode.
Good. Okay.
Wonderful. Jerry, it has been an honor and a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so, so much for taking the time of your day to record with me. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, my pleasure. I hope I'll be able to open things up a little bit. I'm sure there's so much to talk about. We haven't really touched on.
We're going to have you back on, and this has been great. Thank you so much.
Chaos. Pleasure.
Cheers.